Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And welcome. How you doing, folks? Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. Starting here at about 10:06 for you military folk. It's 22:06. You don't have to laugh. I know that everybody thinks it's everybody thinks their job is cool. I was recently at the airport, and I asked one of the people at the desk what gate I was at. And they said, you are at Bravo 22. Okay. I'm looking on my shoulders here. I don't see any little arrows, anything on my shoulders. I've got no salad on my chest in terms of medals. I don't, what does that mean? I know what Bravo means. I know what it means. But I'm a civilian. I know I'm in an airport, and I know it's cool airport talk to say Alpha and Beta, or Alpha and Bravo and Charlie. I understand that. I know the jargon. But I'm not in the profession. So just say you're at gate B22. Don't give me Bravo. Then they were saying it over the loudspeaker. Those going to Philadelphia, you're at Alpha, you're at gate Alpha 17. Now, what if there's somebody who's never been to an airport before? They don't know what Alpha is. Come on, guys. Just A24. That's it. I've been here 2 minutes already complaining. But that's the charm of an Elton Jim show. And I hope you'll continue to stay with us for the next 3 hours. Got lots of stuff planned. Once again, as always, jamming at least 5 pounds of bologna into a 1-pound bag. And today we've got happy to be reunited with the producer for today's show, Curtis Koch. How you doing there, Curtis? Whoop. I can't hear you with the music on. Why don't you take the music down and you can talk.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. Doing well. How about you?
Very good. We were together a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We will be actually together Sunday morning at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So a double. A twofer. An Elton Jim and Curtis twofer. Well, there's about 27 hours in between.
But we're also with Roger Badish both shifts, too.
Now David Jennings, who I love the dulcetones of a David Jennings, and always nice to see David. I just saw him as I walked into the newsroom. But then there was Roger nipping at the heel. So Roger starts at 10:30, right?
Yeah.
So they're sort of in a crossover, and there's Roger. He's waving to me on the screen, but Roger, you understand this is radio, Roger.
I know.
He's waving to me. It doesn't really help the...
It's the change of the guard.
Yeah. It doesn't really help the radio listener. I know that we're multi-platform. You know, what I love about radio is the thing that, unfortunately, is getting lost in radio. I love the art and the theater of radio. Now, Roger left already. I was talking to Roger, and he just left. Fine.
I'm here.
Oh, pfft. You're not there. You walked away, Roger. But I love the theater of the mind of radio. But now, everybody's got to see everything. And it ruins everything. You know, before, you know, you do a nice impersonation of somebody, and someone thinks the person's actually in the room. But now, if you do an impersonation, even if it's good, they see you on the multi-platform, and they go, oh, well, he's doing the voice. No fun at all.
Well, it's your TV audition.
Yeah, I guess. I just did, for all you know, I just did a Roger Badish voice. Right?
You could.
Yeah.
You could be all three of us. You could be Curtis, yourself, and me.
How do you even know I'm here? I could. Now that's deep. That's deep. Wow. Are we really here? I was slow to the table, but just yesterday on 4th of July, people say, "What did you do, Jim, on 4th of July?" And I'm going to talk about what happened here in Chicago on 4th of July. But what
hey,
I did
Jim,
was,
what'd you do on the 4th of July?
Well, while it was a beautiful day, there was threats of rain. Did it rain by a Roger?
Nope, not at all. Not a drop.
Yeah, and it didn't rain at all by me.
It rained by me.
Oh, yeah? Now, where are you, Curtis?
I'm in Crystal Lake.
Oh, are you?
Northwest suburbs, yeah. So
where do you live in Crystal? I have very good friends that live in Crystal Lake.
I am north of downtown. I am kind of just like about the midway point between downtown Crystal Lake and McHenry.
My friends live near the lake itself.
Okay.
Yeah,
I usually go. My buddy has a boat, so we usually go out on
the
actual.
Yeah, so does mine. So, and we literally drive not even a mile. He's right there. We just, and then.
Oh, okay.
I take Randall. I turn at Ackman.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly where you're talking.
And then I turn right on.
You go to the fork in the road?
Yeah. I go to the Slauson cutoff. And I cut off my Slauson. I can't remember the turn. I just know the turn. I turn right, and it swerves a little, and I'm right by the lake. It takes me by the right where the little clubhouse is.
Yeah, I know, by Main Beach.
Yeah.
I can't remember the
street. Yeah, they live on Chestnut.
Yeah.
Which is right.
I know where that's at.
Yeah, it's right near where the little general store is. What's that general store?
Because
that's the other town, right?
It's I think like Lakewood.
Lakewood.
Yeah.
Yeah, the general store. Yeah, but they're like Lakewood's on one side and Crystal Lake's on the other.
Yeah.
Oh, I know the area well. So it was raining in Crystal Lake.
Yeah, I had about, 10of my friends over. We were grilling and everything. Thankfully, we got the burgers and stuff in.
Did it rain bad?
Oh, yeah. It
really?
Poured. Yeah, it
poured
on us, yeah.
And Roger, where are you at? You're sort of east, right? I can't hear you at all. Why isn't your mic?
Oh, there we go. There you go. That would help.
How long have you been doing this, Roger?
Are
you just started doing broadcasting, right?
Yeah, I did. What does the O-N and the O-F-F mean?
Jesus. I wish the O-F-F was you. No.
I could make that happen.
No, I kid, Roger. No, is it on the O-N now?
Park, and we were golfing Wednesday, and it was supposed to rain all day.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Thursday we had the parade in Skokie and the master ceremonies there, and I was looking. The start of the rain kept moving from noon and then
right,
one,
exactly.
And then two. Never happened.
Well, that's the thing. I was very tentative to do anything because you were hearing about these afternoon storms, and then it got to be like 2 p.m, and I'm sort of like, well, it's either let's rain or let's not. So basically, it was a little cloudy, but it certainly wasn't anything. No rain at all, but so I actually got on the bandwagon and we binge watched Stranger Things episode, the first season. I had not seen it yet. So I said, well, let's just hunker down. If it rains, who cares? And we watched Stranger Things. And I bring that up because of the different dimensions, which I never even knew what that whole story was about. Have you seen Stranger?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of Stranger Things.
So
yeah,
now,
so are we.
Yeah, season three just dropped now,
just
right?
Just dropped on the 4th, and Bridget and I watched the first episode last night. She's missed a whole bunch of stuff.
Uh-huh.
She watched some of the first season and then didn't watch the rest. I've seen the whole thing.
So don't say anything except how is season three so far?
The first episode is great.
Oh, really?
There is, because it's on Netflix, so there is like... Previously on Stranger Things, and they kind of recap the first two seasons.
Oh,
so
they do.
If you've never seen the first two seasons, you can catch up and then go into the next.
No, I'm very impressed. The only thing I would say about it is that it is very derivative. I thought, I thought it's very well made, and I'm very interested. And I went now in season two. I want to see what happens to Will. But I thought it was really kind of a mixmaster of E.T. and Goonies and Stand By Me and a few other Stephen King kind of, what was Firestarter? Wasn't that? What was
Firestarter. Wasn't that what's her name?
With what's her name?
Kept throwing fires.
Yeah.
And
it seemed,
burn.
So it seemed very Stephen Kingish to me and very. And then at times it felt very 80s romantic comedy. like, where the parents are the big adults. All the adults are really stupid, except for the government guys who are mean. But the kids wind up being the smartest people on the planet, you know, which is kind of interesting. But I'm hooked. I'm going to watch season two, definitely. May even watch it over the weekend. So we'll get ready for season three. But, yeah, I'm talking about other dimensions and everything. And that was, I had no idea that that's where the story went. So that was kind of fun to.
Yeah, it's good. You'll like it. You'll
yeah,
like it.
Yeah. I don't know why I brought up different dimensions now that I'm talking to
well,
you.
Well, because you live in a few, don't you?
Hi-oh!
Hello!
Lady! So what do we have planned here? Right off the bat, I'm looking forward at 10:30. We're going to talk. I went to Ravinia a couple of weeks ago and saw Tony Bennett. All right! Thank you! It is great to be back in Ravinia, my 40th show. All right! Yes, that is my impersonation of Alec Baldwin doing Tony Bennett. It is not Tony Bennett. Most of my best impressions are of other people doing impressions. Like, I can do Johnny Carson, but of course I'm doing Dana Carvey doing Johnny Carson.
Wait, that sounded more like Rich Little doing Johnny Carson.
Well, it's actually Rich Little doing Dana Carvey doing Johnny Carson. Well, actually, you know, the cool thing, Rich Little was the first one to do Johnny Carson.
That's right.
And now I forget it. I saw it the first time, and he brought the house down. It was on a Johnny Carson roast, one of those Dean Martin roasts. And,
yeah.
And Rich Little went up there and all of a sudden started to do the whole spiel with the Johnnies, with the, you know, the way he would have those little mannerisms, mm-hmm, and he did mm-hmm. the voice, and everybody was just
And
like,
then Johnny even had Rich Little fill in for him
right.
on the Tonight Show several times.
Yeah.
Because he loved him so
oh,
much.
Oh, yeah. No, Rich Little was the impersonator
oh,
du jour
yeah.
in the 70s. And then, unfortunately, impersonations got not to be popular for whatever reason.
Right.
It's got to be kind of a hacky thing. And now it's sort of coming back. I've been doing impersonations since I was, you know, 5 years old. So
Frank Caliendo is
right.
my favorite.
He sort of brought it back when he started doing John Madden and all those, you know,
yeah. uh-huh.
all those people and stuff. But yeah, no, it's no doubt Rich Little, and like I said, but I usually do impersonations of the person who does an impersonation.
Yeah.
So, all right. But anyway, so I went to Ravinia, and they've got a new club there, and it was very nice, and it was right before the Tony Bennett show. It was his 40th show, and my gosh, was he great. We'll talk about it later. But we're going to have Nick Puglia, who was the director of communications for Ravinia, and a longtime friend of mine. Nick and I go back more than 30 years. We started out together in newspaper world. I was a music columnist at a newspaper, and he was the movie columnist at the same newspaper. And that's the way we first met, and we've bonded, and we have been friends ever since. But Nick's going to talk about the new BMO Club at Ravinia, as well as what's coming up at Ravinia in the next couple of weeks. And it's always a great place to go. I love going to Ravinia. So we'll talk a little Ravinia. After that, we are going to talk. I haven't talked sports in a while. And as we all know, tomorrow is part two of the Crosstown Classic.
Yeah.
And so I thought it would be very fitting to talk Cubs and Sox, as well as I wasn't even planning on this until the last week. The Chicago Blackhawks, who lit a fire under Stan Bowman? I know exactly who lit the fire. I think it was Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough. I think they had a meeting with Stan and said, look, last year we got rid of Joel. Do you like working here? And so I think Stan got the message. I think the entire organization got the message. And in the last week or so, they brought back Andrew Shaw, which was a huge favorite of Hawk fans, and a grinder who sits in front of the net and who gets rebound goals and screens the goalie. And they haven't had a guy like that since Dustin Byfuglien left here.
Well, plus a little physicality in there.
That's
too.
What I mean. So that
yeah.
was a great pickup to bring him back. And then they shocked everybody by getting a Vezina Trophy nominee goalie, Robin Lehner.
Lehner, from the Islanders,
from the New York Islanders. So, wow. Whew. Right away, the Blackhawks are showing not only the Blues in their own division, who just won the cup, that they are not going to sit and just let the Blues now suddenly dominate that division. So the Blackhawks.
You haven't mentioned they recently got Calvin DeHaan, who's a really good defenseman from the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And they also got Ali Mata earlier before.
And then Carpenter. They got
Ryan Carpenter from Vegas. So they've
yeah, no, they're stocking up. They're serious about it. They've been, don't forget, the Blackhawks have missed the playoff the last 2 years in a row. Plus, they got knocked out of the playoffs the 2 years before that. So it's been 4 years, almost 5 years now, the Blackhawks have been a major power. And so I think that the entire organization has been put on notice, and you could see that the upcoming season is going to be quite interesting. So we're going to talk to Mark Vasco, who is a sports guy here in the Chicago area, a sports anchor, and we'll talk Cubs Sox. As I said, they play at Guaranteed Rate Field starting tomorrow for the Crosstown Classic, and we'll talk a little bit about the Blackhawks, too. And then what I want to talk about, and I'll take a quick break. Don't worry, Curtis. It's always important to listen to me.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
And the reason I say this is that about 2 years ago, I, on one of my fill-ins, I don't know what day it was, what crazy hour I was on, but I talked about the advantages and the almost elegant design of a certain eating utensil called the spork. And I pushed for the spork to be one of our main eating utensils. There is the spoon, there is the fork, and there is the knife. But I argue that the spork deserves its own little holder in your drawer, in that bad little plastic thing you stick in your drawer for your utensils.
Well, don't you have one that, because normally you should only have three spaces, right?
I think three
in that
or four.
In that container.
Yeah.
We've got one that's got five.
Yeah, well, then there you should have a spork. Every house, I want a spork in every pot. The spork is the most perfect eating utensil. You have it when you go to a fast food place sometimes. Mm-hmm. You get the plastic spork.
Right.
But I was eating with a spork about 2 years ago, and I said, this is the greatest thing. I've never really focused on how great it is because it both stabs and scoops.
Right.
Two in one.
Yeah.
So in that little drawer you have,
mm-hmm.
you can save a whole extra space.
That's true.
You don't need the fork and spoon when you have the spork.
Right.
And so I went on a big tantrum and rant, as I usually do. And I thought nobody heard it. But apparently, somebody at Walt Disney heard it.
They did?
Well, they must have. Because the star of Toy Story 4
mm-hmm.
is a spork.
No way.
Forky the spork. Thank you very much.
In the credits at the end, are you listed?
It says
credits to.
It says inspired by the comedy of Jim Tirano.
Oh well, there you go.
Yeah.
When's the check coming?
So all I have to say is, if you listened 2 years ago, you heard me railing about how great the spork is. Well, somebody at Disney heard it, and if you go see Toy Story 4, you will see this new star of the summer is not Brad Pitt, is not Leonardo DiCaprio. It is a spork. And we will talk more about the spork on this show. So that is just a tip of the iceberg of what we have planned between now and 1 o'clock.
And before you go to break real quick, another earthquake in
really?
California felt in Las Vegas and San Diego, Palm Springs. Some people are now reporting that 45 seconds of shaking. The report's just coming in, so we are keeping our eye on that. Again, this would be the third day of a major aftershock from the original 6.4 quake a couple of days ago.
I was in a 6.6 when I was about 12 years old in Mexico City, or in Acapulco, and I'll tell you, that's a whole lot of shaking going on.
Yeah.
It lasted about a minute, and in our hotel room, our sink cracked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was major. Yeah.
Wow.
But let me take a quick break here because Curtis's eyes are rolling. It's Jim Tirano. I'm not filling in for anybody, I guess. This is the first time. I'm not filling in for anybody. I'm just here from 10 to 1. We hope you will be here, too, at 7:20 a.m. in Chicago. Jim Tirano will be back after this. No switching.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
All right. Tony Bennett. I saw Tony recently at Ravinia. His 40th show at that historic and hallowed ground that we call Ravinia Festival in Highland Park. And I've got Nick Puglia, who is the Director of Communications for Ravinia, on the phone. How you doing there, Nick?
Jim, it's great to be with you. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. Are you actually at Ravinia right now as we speak?
No, we are dark tonight. It's a very rare dark night for us in the summertime. So
right.
I get to spend some time with you.
Wow, nothing going on. So if I were you, I mean, wouldn't it be fun right now just to go to work and run around in the dark on the grass?
Well, you know, I do that sometimes with my dogs, actually.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Well, I don't do the actual running. I more like watch them.
Yeah, right. Well, I've got to say that you've got probably one of the best offices in the country. There's no question about that.
It is so exciting. You know, it's funny because when I got out of journalism, I said, I'm going to go into PR and work at Ravinia for 2 years. And that was 20 years ago. This is my 20th summer.
Wow, congratulations. That's great.
Thank
you. It's got to be great. As I said, I remember when I was on the afternoon show here at WGN, and I always said that the Showcase Studio right on Michigan Avenue had the best view of any office in Chicago, just right there in the Showcase Studio. Now we're in the Allstate Skyline Studio up on the 18th floor, far away from Michigan Avenue. But I got to say that while that was a great view of the lake,
especially when the Marilyn Monroe statue was up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, believe me. Didn't need any wind either. But you've got a great place to go to work every day. And I wanted to mention and you to talk about, because I was able to experience it myself when I saw Tony Bennett there a few weeks ago. And once again, 40th show there. And my gosh, he is going to be 93 next month. And he came out with a spring in his step and a huge smile on his face and incredibly in amazing voice once again.
This man feeds off the live audience. This is what keeps him young. I don't think he'll ever retire.
I'll tell you, I have seen him over the last couple of years, Tony Bennett, and he's been on some shows a lot of times in New York. I've seen him on the tree lighting ceremony and things like that. They have him on there. And I've seen him, and there's been a few times where it's been a little sketchy, and I'm like, well, geez, maybe Tony, you know, come on, the guy's in his 90s. You can't expect him to be singing forever. So, you know, I didn't know what to expect, and it was ironic because the night that I saw him there at Ravinia was also the night that the Rolling Stones were the first opening their tour here at Soldier Field. And so I thought how funny it was that there was a bunch of 70-year-olds rocking Soldier Field, and there was a 90-year-old, rocking Ravinia.
See, 90 is the new 70, and 70 is the new culture club.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But I'll tell you, I mean, he literally ran out with a skip on his he skipped out. I was like, look at this guy. And he had the biggest smile, and he always does that hug thing where he sort of embraces his, you know, he hugs himself when people are clapping, almost like he can feel the love. And I'll tell you, not only did the crowd, give him a standing ovation, thank you, Norm Crosby, but I'll tell you, it wasn't just obligatory. This guy was singing so well, and what I really appreciated most about it is that there are times when he's singing and he's such a pro that he knows that way, you know, that note is not going to come, but he has a way then of just massaging that note in the right way. So it just, he might not have hit the high note he was wanting to, but he stayed in key and massaged
it. Yeah, he's a jazz singer, you know.
Yeah.
Howard Wright, you know, the Tribune's jazz critic, adores Bennett for a reason. This guy can take the turns, tight, loose. He can,
yeah,
whatever you throw at him, he's got to come. There's a man who danced with Lady Gaga a couple of years ago, you know?
Yeah.
He just doesn't get old. And he even added new songs, Jim, that he hasn't done at Ravinia before.
Yeah.
And when you say that the audience rises to their feet right away, and that really is love. I mean, these people have been coming year after year, And it's that unique combination. Sometimes a venue and a performer just click, and it just seems also right.
Yeah.
You know, we had Lionel Richie this summer already as well, and it was his first time here, but he was so at ease and so at home with the people that he felt like he was someone who had been there all the while. You know, people were surprised that it was his first time, because they, and I think I saw him here before. I was like, no, believe me, you haven't.
Did he, was he indeed dancing on the ceiling?
He was not dancing on the ceiling, but he was very funny. I had no idea. I mean, his patter, his repertoire, is the songs are strong, you know, all the hits, but the in-between patter
really
was very funny, and I didn't expect that of him, so I was very surprised.
So what I mean, so what does Lionel Richie tell, like mother-in-law jokes or what?
No, in the moment, reacting to the bugs that flew into his mouth.
Oh, really?
Discovering that there are thousands of people on the lawn that he couldn't see, as he described the lawn, an undisclosed location.
Is that what he said? How funny! Well, who's there this weekend?
So we have, we have the big Chuck Khan and Michael McDonald show tomorrow night.
I ain't blind, and I don't like what I think I see.
Yeah, you know, that's right. And we're just going to take that minute by minute and see how it goes.
Oh, hi-o!
Hello.
Wow, look at you.
We're feeding into the Bohemian Rhapsody craze, and we're going to have a tribute show to Queen with an orchestra and a pop band that's going to do all those great hits. A big party night at Ravinia, so it's good.
Nice. Well, talk about
Jim, I want to tell you, in case there are listeners, and I can't believe there are any listeners of WGN who have never been to Ravinia, but just in case you haven't been to Ravinia, the word festival is misleading. It's not like porta potties and stuff.
No, not at all.
It's a really, really nice place.
No, I mean, in fact, I have to say that in the 20 years that you've been there, you've mentioned how you've been there 20 years now. I mean, the actual physical plant of Ravinia has been upgraded sound-wise and seating-wise and landscaping-wise, the grass and accoutrements around there, certainly the food courts and other buildings. It is really, if you have not been to Ravinia in a while, then you have not been to Ravinia. It really is a class act and really a gem in our area. And if you're a music fan, there are few places that are better to see any kind of music. And that's one of the great things about Ravinia, is that you could see such a wide variety of different genres, whether it's pop or classical or jazz or country. You guys have really done an amazing job of diversifying the sound. What I want to talk to you about is this new club that I had a chance to test out, called the BMO Club, which you just opened a couple of weeks ago.
That's correct. And again, the word club is as misleading as the word festival, because it's not like a private club with leather chairs. It's a rooftop bar that everybody can go to. It's a beautiful space. If you haven't been above the lawn at Ravinia looking at the crowds as they come in, you are missing some of the best people watching in the city.
Yeah, that's a great view. That is an awesome view.
And you know, it's just so wonderful to be up there. You can hear the music, you can hear the concert up there. Get some drinks, some signature drinks. We're going to do specials related to the artists who come to Ravinia. We've got some food options up there that the chef is going to be changing out on a regular basis based on micro-seasonal availability of locally sourced food.
What was that lemon drink? What was that lemon drink they had that night?
Yeah, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, what was that?
The Limerick Lemonade.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man.
Did you have more than six?
That wasn't the same lemonade that I was selling in my stand on Roscoe Street. I'll tell you that.
Well, you'd be a lot richer now if it were.
And it wasn't. And it wasn't a quarter either.
No, it's a beautiful new space. And you mentioned the improvements. Wells Kaufman and we have a very strong volunteer board. Vinny's a not-for-profit, and it's governed by a volunteer board of really smart businessmen. And together with our president and CEO, Wells Kaufman, over the past 15 years, we've put $55 million worth of improvements into the infrastructure.
Well, it looks like it. It looks like it. I mean, it is. I mean, I remember, I've been going to Ravinia for more than 30 years, and I remember, you know, sitting in the lawn, and there were times when you really couldn't even hear the band all that
well. The sound system itself, you know, it's really cool. It's the reason why we ask people not to put umbrellas or tents or stick anything into the ground is because there's an intricate pattern of wires under the ground, because the natural sound wave from the stage hits you at the same time the speaker nearest you then pops on. So it's that closely timed. So there's no reverb and no echo. The speaker is triggered at the same second that sound wave hits you.
Yeah, no, like I said.
It's an amazing experience.
Yeah, and then I think it's great that you've added the video screens over the last several years. So that adds to the experience, not even for people, in the pavilion, but also if you're walking around, you can sort of see the pavilion through the concourse near the stage there. And also,
yeah, about 40% of the lawn can see those big screens in the pavilion now. But I'm glad you brought up screens because we're having West Side Story open up our CSO season. For those of you who haven't seen a movie with us, we actually have the score from the film digitally removed, and the CSO then plays that music live as you're watching the movie. And it's such a cool experience. First of all, just the movie itself, of course, it's a great movie, right? And there's generations who have only seen it on TV.
Are you a shark or a jet, Nick?
Oh, I am a jet from the Revolutionary War airport.
Well, somewhere there is a place for us, Nick.
That's right, and it's for video because you're going to see a film with 10,000 people all laughing at Officer Krupke or 10,000 people sobbing at the same time. It's such a communal social experience, which is what Ravinia is all about. I mean, it's not a two-hour concert at Ravinia. It's like a five-hour evening where you have drinks and food, and people can bring their own picnic, or you can dine in one of our restaurants. And so every time you come to Ravinia, it's a wholly different experience.
And isn't Dean Richards from WGN hosting that?
Dean Richards is, and what we do is we have a giant screen on the lawn, and I cannot tell you how beautiful the screen is. The luminosity is just extraordinary.
Is that a word?
Yeah.
Illuminosity?
The luminosity of Dean Richards alone is worth talking about, let alone this giant screen. And we put a Twitter feed up on the screen behind him so that people on the lawn can tweet questions to him as he's talking about the films. You know, Dean is very knowledgeable about these movies and great film historian. And what makes him so appealing as a speaker is he's not just a historian. He's a true fan of these movies. And so, he's doing a pre-concert talk before the movie starts. He's got it out 7:15. The movie starts at 8 o'clock.
Oh, nice.
And it is so fun.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you guys have done an amazing job of upgrading the facility and expanding the offerings music-wise. And I, every year, look forward to the new slate and always make at least two or three trips to Ravinia, if not more. And thanks to Nick, and it's much appreciated, I've been able to contribute to Ravinia in a small way in that the last two or three years, I've been writing several stories for Ravinia Magazine, for the magazine that is given out free at the venue about different acts. And there's there's two issues each month to cover the entire slate of the schedule. And so, but I've been happy this year. I unfortunately was out of town. I couldn't see the show, but I was very happy. I've got some really good feedback. I wrote a story about John Prine in the June issue, and I heard that was a great show there.
Jim, did you miss? First of all, thank you for writing for the magazine. We love having you.
To me, it's an honor because I really, I mean, it's just a story, and but in some small way to contribute to the Ravinia experience to me is a great honor. So,
yeah, thank you so much. And the magazine, everybody should know, is it's a real magazine. It's not just a program book.
No, it's a beautiful four color magazine. Oh, it's well produced.
Yeah. So thank you so much, and so. We're glad to have you part of that, but I'm so sorry you missed that Pride show because it was extraordinary.
Oh, you know, I'm so mad because last year I was out of town. I wrote a story and I wanted to see the Roger Daltrey orchestral version of Tommy, yeah. and he did two shows. That's what I mean. And so there were two, but I was out of town. I don't know if I went to see Elton. I went to Los Angeles actually to see the Cubs play. So I was out of town. I was so mad when those dates came up because I wrote the story, you know, several months before, but I couldn't see the show. And you told me how great that show was. And then I do the John Prine story. And then on June 8th, I was in Amsterdam seeing Elton. So I couldn't see that John Prine show.
See, there you go. All we got to do is make sure you're out of town, and we're going to have a brilliant show. So the correlation is clear.
Well, before I let you go, Nick, what I do want to bring up very quickly is I take a lot of heat, and not heat, but in a fun way. But, I mean, obviously my nickname is Elton Jim here. I've been to 193 Elton John shows, and I'm a huge fan. But as crazy as I am, and you say, Jim, oh, my God, it's so crazy. You travel over the place, and you're this big fan of Elton John's, and you've spent all this money and all this time, and you're so crazy. But just so you know, folks, I'm not the only crazy one, because there are other people who like other acts and stars who do the same thing like I do. And Nick, you tell me where you're seeing and where you have seen Barbara Streisand in your life. And how many times have you seen her? God.
Barbara is, I got it bad and it ain't good for Barbara.
How many times have you seen her?
Well, she only performs very rarely.
Right.
There was a long gap between 1972 and 1994 where she didn't perform publicly at all. And then that comeback show on New Year's Eve of 93-94 was $5,000 a ticket. And we all paid it because we didn't know if it was ever going to happen again.
And so you've seen her. So at what venues have you seen her?
Oh, I've seen her at MGM Grand. I've even gone to Columbus, Ohio to see her. I've seen her in New York, of course, in Chicago. Las Vegas. I think that the thing with Barbara and me is I was a little street kid in Chicago. I didn't care about the arts. I was about 12, 13 years old when A Star Is Born came out. I went to go see the movie more for the air conditioning than anything else. and I was just blown away. I had no familiarity with her at all. So I bought the soundtrack, and I was like, wow, this is really something. And I bought the new album Streisand Superman came out after Star Is Born, and that was incredible too. And I started gobbling up all of her albums, and through that, she introduced me to the music of Bernstein, through the music of Gershwin. That made me curious about classical music. So in a way, she was the bedrock of my cultural awakening, and I owe her a debt because my whole career has been in the cultural world. And it's because she opened my eyes. God knows what I would be doing if it wasn't for Barbara Streisand, even though she doesn't have any idea that I exist.
Well, I'll tell you, that's what's so cool, because everybody talks, and I feel the same way in my devotion and fandom, if whatever you want to call it, to Elton. I was 9 years old, and I had no idea who some of these people are, some of these great rock and roll as well as classical people were. But it was reading about Elton and his influences, like Jerry Lee Lewis, like Fats Domino, like Little Richard, like Elvis Presley.
It almost is a patron saint for you, as it is for me. It's like it's beyond the personal artistry, because they awaken something within you.
And you are going, and Barbara is coming to the United Center in October, correct?
No, August 6th.
Oh, August. So that's next month.
Yeah, it's coming up really fast.
And will you see other shows on this tour, too?
I already bought my new underwear.
Oh. Is that your evergreen underwear?
let's hope.
Are you seeing your other places besides Chicago?
No, that's one thing about Barbara, is that she's pretty costly. So
yeah, no kidding. Yeah, believe me. Well, like I said, I joke with my wife, and she's like, how come you couldn't have found a guy that you liked or a performer you liked that would just be playing bars for $10? You got to still like Elton John and Bruce. I mean, Elton John's tour now just was announced as the top-selling tour of 2019 so far. So, I mean, the tickets ain't cheap. And then, of course, I like Bruce Springsteen, too. So my two favorites are still playing major arenas at age 70.
Broadway was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I saw that twice. It was an amazing show.
It's just an extraordinary show. And now I'm going to, I'm going to have a dream tonight that we're going to have a double bill of Barbara Streisand and Elton John.
Gosh, Nick. I'm writing the story, I know I'll be at that one.
And I'll be cowboy. Are you kidding?
Well, Nick Pulley is the director of communications at Ravinia Festival in Highland Park. There are plenty of shows left between now and in mid-September when the season ends. So if you want to have a great, great way to spend a summer evening with friends, by yourself, with your significant other, it's a beautiful venue. The music is great. The sound is great. The food is great. As I said, the garlic parmesan fries are among my favorites. And as I said, I've always had a sweet spot for Ravinia. And so
fried chicken this year too, Jim, for the first time.
Is what?
We have fried chicken for the first time too this year.
Oh, finger looking good.
It's wonderfully good.
Oh, very good. Well, and don't forget to check out the new BMO Club. It is a elevated club that gives you a beautiful view of the lawn, as well as check out that Lyric Lemonade. Wow, that stuff is good stuff. Nick Puglia, thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you at Ravinia soon sometime, I'm sure.
Thank you, Elton. Jim, I'll see you out there.
Okay, take care, Nick. Jim Tirano here at WGN, 720 AM. It's about 6 minutes to 11. We'll be back right after this. No switching.
Let's go! Batter up! We're taking the afternoon off. It's a beautiful day for a ball game. For a ball game today.
Ba-da-da-da-da. Jim Tirano with you here at WGN, 720 AM. Be here till 1 AM. Let me hand things off to Matt Bubala. I've been filling in for quite a while here, and it's been a while since I've talked sports. And I thought, considering how in a couple of hours it'll be, in less than an hour, it'll be officially Saturday, and then we can say today is the continuation of the Crosstown Series between the Chicago White Sox and the Chicago Cubs. First two games were played at Wrigley, and now they go to Guaranteed Rate Field and play two games. And so I thought we should talk a little bit about the sporting world and what's going on. It's a big deal. This is always the big rivalry in the city. And this year, these games mean something. A lot of times, this Crosstown Series is more of just a fan rivalry. But right now, the Cubs are in the hunt for first place. They've had a very uneven season. And the Chicago White Sox are clearly on the rise, and they want to be above 500, if not more, and really show that this rebuild is not just talk, but is real. And so these games mean something to both teams, and it's going to be an interesting next couple of days. So I thought we would get one of my favorite sports guys on the phone, Mark Vasco. How you doing, Mark?
Doing really good, Jim. How are you?
Very good. So as we get into a Crosstown Classic, which is tied right now at 1-1, what are you expecting to see in the next couple of days?
Well, who knows? with these teams, it doesn't matter if the Cubs are the big favorite, the White Sox can clobber them. I mean, you just never know. But you talked about it. These two teams have almost the same records, believe it or not. I mean, the Sox are just, you know, flirting with 500 from just below it, and the Cubs are flirting with it, frankly, from just above it. And it just doesn't seem like it should be that way.
One team is 15 games out, and the other one is tied for first.
Well, exactly. And I was looking at some of the numbers, and the White Sox, they're doing this with magic or something. You know their run differential? They're minus 70 in run differential.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've been very surprised. I did not expect, I mean, the White Sox lost 100 games last year. And so, you know, think about it. If you've lost 100 games, if you lose 90 this year, that's improvement. But to possibly, you know, be a 500 team is a huge leap. And if they could be over 500, even a game over after losing 100 games last year, I mean, once again, the rebuild is not just hype. It's something to take seriously.
Oh, there's no doubt. No matter what happens the next couple of days, I mean, the White Sox prospects are definitely going in the right direction. The Cubs fans, you know, had to sit through this, you know, the rough span of the rebuild. And, you know, so they've been through all this. And now the White Sox are there where they're on the cusp. And it shows you how important relief pitching is. Because the Cubs, Yeah, well, exactly. You know, they've had 19 saves out of 32 chances. That's abysmal.
I have been screaming about the Cubs bullpen for, well, ever since they let Chapman go. And
right.
what kills me is that they, you know, look, Chapman won the World Series. He was a free agent. He was really a rent a player, and it worked for what they wanted him for. But at the same time, I think of all the pitchers and all the relievers, big name guys as well as scrubs, that they've brought in the last 3 years since they let him go. And I'm sure that that money that they paid, whether it was Wade Davis or Morrow or all these other guys, would have easily been the same amount of money that you would have paid if you gave it to Chapman and kept him.
There's no question.
And you wouldn't have to go through all these headaches. I mean, Strope is not a closer. He is not a closer. He's a setup guy. And so finally now they get Krimbrel, and hopefully, you know, that he'll be able to pitch to his ability and really give the Cubs, for the first time since their World Series, a lights-out reliever, closer, who puts the fear of God in the other team, because they have not had that. Any team that's either one run behind or even three runs behind going in the ninth inning against the Cubs thinks they can still win with that bullpen.
Well, no question. Well, Montgomery's had a very bad season. Edwards has had a bad season. They could not afford to have bad seasons from guys in their bullpen that they have relied on. And that's why the White Sox are where they are, is because when they get late leads, there haven't been as many as the Cubs, but they close them down. You know, Cullum has been tremendous at the back of their bullpen. So it's, you know, and now Giolito, after a terrible start.
Oh, my gosh.
But he had amazing stuff. And I was like, well, if he ever figures it out, he's going to be amazing. Well, he figured it out because he's amazing. And they've got so many good young hitters, although they just haven't scored runs for all the hitters that they have. You'd think they'd score more runs. But, they don't make as many mistakes. The Cubs have a ton of errors.
Oh.
Defensively, that is.
I mean, Cubs are so lucky that Milwaukee is not dominating like they were last year, because they would be 10 games out. I mean, this is really, and I really believe, you know, once again, you have to say to Ricketts and to Theo that they've gone out and they've given Madden. I mean, they went out and get, you know, Kimbrel, whether it was because of Zobrist's contract or whatever the reason, I don't care. They got him. They signed him. They've given Madden the horses. And I've been screaming at the television for 4 years with Joe Madden. And I know that for many Cub fans, because he won the World Series, all past and future sins are all forgiven for Joe Madden in some Cub fans' eyes, and that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, if you want this team to win again in another 100 years, then you have to look at reality, and Joe Madden is not a National League manager. He's an American League manager who goes and waits for the home run or the big hit. He does not know, or at least doesn't want to, manufacture runs. I have never seen him give a take sign on a team that deserves. Every player on that team should get the take sign at least once at bat, because they are the biggest free swingers and the biggest garbage pitch swingers I've ever seen. And somebody, and I saw somebody say, oh, we don't want to take, you know, well, they're free swingers. Well, then that's why you have a manager. The manager is supposed to manage the team and help the player when he can't help himself. And that means sometimes giving him the take sign instead of letting these guys just swing at balls over their head in the dirt. You know, you got a man on first base. I don't care who it is. You bunt the guy to second. You hit the ball to the right side to get him to third. And you could score a run, a wild pitch, anything. But Madden never does that.
Well, and I laugh because every time it seems someone has a great day, he sits him the next day.
Oh, yeah.
So if he has a two home run game and a triple, I'm like, well, I guarantee you he's not playing tomorrow. And sure enough, he's not playing the next day. He never plays the hot hand. He's like, well, I make the lineup out for the series before the series starts. Well, you might want to amend that if the guy's on a hot streak. I think you're penalized for having a good day with Joe Madden.
The Cubs won that World Series in spite of Joe Madden. His handling of the pitchers was atrocious to the point where even after they won the game, I really couldn't enjoy it because it was a win that was so stress filled, and you could see the writing on the wall that they're going to give this win, they're going to give this one away again. And I just think that I believe that Theo Epstein would like to fire Joe Madden, but I believe that at the beginning of this season, how do you fire a guy that's, you know, won a World Series and won 95 games last year? So I think that he is waiting, but I think that Joe Madden wants a Craig Counsell kind of guy. He wants a guy in his 30s or 40s. He wants a sabermetrics guy. He wants a stats guy. Joe Madden is old school. He manages by the gut, and that is not the way baseball is played anymore. And I just think that Theo Epstein is looking for a way, just the way the Blackhawks had to find a way. They didn't want to, but they had to find a way to get rid of Joel Quenneville, and they did. And so Joe Madden is not untouchable, fans. He just isn't.
No, he's not. He's not coming back unless they win it all. I don't think he's coming back.
No.
I agree with you. I think they're looking to move on.
Yeah, and so it's going to be very interesting because I think there's going to be some backlash. Because I said some Cub fans, you know, the sad thing about the Cub fans that drives me crazy is that they won a World Series and they just think, well, that's enough. Okay, we won. No, the goal is to win every year. And some Cub fans are happy to say, well, hey, we won it. I don't care. I saw it in my lifetime. That's good enough for me. That's not the way Theo Epstein is thinking. That's not the way Ricketts is thinking. And that's not the way a real Cub fan should be thinking. You want to contend and you want to win several World Series.
Well, because that window, you never know how long that window is going to be there.
Well,
for the Blackhawks, this last run has been so disappointing because the Kane Taves era, you know what I mean, like, you don't know how much longer you have those guys.
Right.
And you can't waste it.
And it's the same thing with the Cubs. You can't waste the fact that you have a Baez and a Rizzo and some of these other guys and a Bryant and things like that. There's going to be a small window here. And I mean, it's hard to believe that Taves and Kane are 30 years old. Look how fast that went.
I know.
You know.
I know.
And as I said,
with the 85 Bears, we thought the 85 Bears were going to win five titles.
I know.
People left, and you know, I mean, that thing didn't stay together. Well, this thing might not stay together either.
No, and you know, I mean, and Theo Epstein the other day, and I more power to him. He said, if things don't change, there are going to be a ton of changes, and I think, I don't think Joe Madden's job is not even, I don't think, secured until the end of this season. I really believe that. I think that if the Cubs don't start to catch some fire here and play up to at least the way that Theo Epstein believes they can, then I think Madden's gone. And in my view, like I said, he's driven me crazy. It's just
well, and Kimbrel's the proof of that. Like you say, okay, we needed a closer. You've got a closer now.
Right.
So now win. So if he doesn't,
right,
especially when there's not a clear runaway in this division either.
Could you imagine?
It's wide open for you.
Could you imagine if they were playing any kind of ball in June? They'd be 10 games up right now.
Oh, right.
Be running away with it.
Those first 2 weeks were inexplicable and inexcusable. Like, they started out terrible. How does that roster start out that terrible?
So now here's the thing. So now we have the Crosstown Classic here, and the White Sox, I mean, the way the both teams are playing now, the White Sox certainly match up with the Cubs. The Cubs just won the other day, but they've been on a skid. The Cubs always play a little strange, you know, at whatever the name Comiskey Park is this week. And so this and these are two games the Cubs need. I mean, the Sox need any kind of games because, as we said before, they're on a rebuild. You just want to have a really good season here and hopefully a winning season to really, you know, build for next year. But the Cubs need these games. They can't give away. Don't forget, last year they wound up tying. Every game is important. And so this is going to really be an interesting couple of days, the next 2 days.
Well, and like you say, one team has all the pressure, and the other team is just going to go out and have fun. And by the way, the manager of the other team, I would have been just as happy if he had stayed manager of the Cubs.
Well, I'll tell you.
I think they would have won the World Series with him too. By the way,
that would have been an interesting thing to see if he could have won. I mean, I think what Joe Maddon brought to the team when he was hired was a message more than his performance. The message was to the Cubs players and to the Cub fans that we are serious about winning. They went out.
Right.
They had just signed Renteria to a 2 or 3 year contract, and they didn't care. They went out and got a proven veteran manager who had won before. They paid him $5 million a year, and to me that was a statement. And I just wonder too, I've got crazy problems with his strategy of how to manage a game. And to your point, which we didn't even talk about, you talked about how he rests a guy after he has a good game.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that drives me crazy is every day the lineup is different.
I know.
And, you know, if you're a baseball player, it's not that easy to go from batting second to batting seventh. Your mind, you have different responsibilities when you're a two-hitter or a three-hitter or a seven or an eight-hitter. And if one day you're a two-hitter and the next day you're an eight-hitter, the way you approach your at-bat and the way you approach the game is completely different. All I know is I can still recite the starting lineup for the 1974 Cincinnati Reds. Because it never changed.
Right.
And that's why they were the big red machine. Sparky Anderson never changed. It was Rose, Morgan, Bench, Foster. I mean, that was it. It never changed.
Well,
and that's why they won.
Right. And to your point, your MVP third baseman shouldn't be playing right field some days.
And why is your catcher playing right field? I mean, what is happening here?
Right. There's no question. Yes, there are some utility guys who should play a lot of positions, but your regular all-stars shouldn't be one of them. They just shouldn't be.
And I'll tell you, your point is well taken about Ricky Renteria. It would have been very interesting to see, with the same horses, could Renteria have brought them, and you believe they could have?
I really like Rick Renteria, and I agreed with the move at the time just for what you said. It's like, all right, we're going forward. We're going all in. We're going to get the best guy available out there, and we're going to go get him. So I agreed with it at the time, but I like the guy that they have. So when he went to the South Side, I went, well, they've got the good guy now who can take them to the next level eventually. And I think he could have won it, because I also agree that Madden did his best to try to ruin it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was screaming. My wife was like, stop, you're going to get a heart attack. I was up at, I was standing next to the screen, screaming at him during game 6 and 7. Literally screaming at him. It was, and I surprised myself, because I'm not like that. But I've been waiting. 40 some years for this too.
Oh yeah.
You know. So.
I was at the Sandberg game, so I go back a long ways myself. You know what I mean? So
yeah. No. You know what? I got to take a quick break, but I want to talk to you about that, because the great Ryne Sandberg game was 30 years ago. Was it 35 or 30? 30, right?
1984, 35.
Yeah, 35 years, yeah, where he hit these two home runs against the Cardinals. It was a great game, and you were there, so I'd like to get your little memories of that. And then after the news, we will talk a little Blackhawks, too, because in the last week or so, wow, the Blackhawks went from, I wonder what kind of season this is going to be, to, hey, St. Louis, the big dog is back in town. So that's going to be interesting. So we'll talk about, we'll continue to talk about the Crosstown Classic, as well as we'll talk about the Blackhawks after the news. I'm going to take a quick break here. Jim Toronto with you here till 1 a.m., 7:20 a.m. in Chicago. No switching.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks.
Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 720 a.m. in Chicago. Be here till 1 a.m. Later in the show, I will be discussing how, once again, it is imperative that you listen to me whenever you can, whether it is live on the radio during my fill-in opportunities or on my weekly podcast here at WGNplus.com, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. A new episode is posted every Monday at WGNplus.com. And for those of you who listen to the podcast on a regular basis over the last 3 years, I've done 161 episodes so far. Maybe, no, 162, I should say. And episode 49, I talked about the spork, the great utensil that is both a spoon and a fork, that both stabs and scoops. And now, after I talked about it 2 years ago, it is now the star, the summer star of the movie season. Not Brad Pitt, not Leonardo DiCaprio, but Forky the Spork from Toy Story 4. Thank you very much. And we will talk about the elegant design and the amazing, I guess, what utility that this utensil gives you, the spork. But before the spork, we're going to talk. We're going from sports to sporks. Boy, say that 10 times. So we will talk sports with a T and sporks with a K later. But right now, sports with a T. And joining us is Mark Vasco, a sports anchor. Are you sporting around these days, Mark?
Not as much as I used to be. But we were talking about that Sandberg game. 1984 was the first year I was a reporter covering the Cubs and the White Sox. So that's long I've been in the business, though.
Wow.
1984 was the first press pass I ever got to cover the Cubs and the Sox.
Nice. Very cool. So you were at the June 23rd, 1984 game where the Cubs, it was a nationally televised game. Cubs were paying the arch rival St. Louis Cardinals. They were down. The Cardinals had former Cub closer ace Bruce Sutter on their side now, and Ryne Sandberg put on quite a show for the national audience, didn't he?
Well, that was the thing. I mean, people forget it was 7-1 at one point in that game.
Oh yeah, I mean it was a blowout. Yeah,
and Rhino actually got it started. He had an RBI grounder, then he had a 2-run single. So all of a sudden, after St. Louis scored a few more runs, now it's 9-3. But those 3 runs were all because of Rhino, basically.
Right.
And that's even before the late game heroics, like Richie Hebner, I think, had a big base hit in that game, and Dernier had a 2-run double. But then,
I used to love Richie Hebner. Oh, did I love Richie Hebner?
I know, I did too.
Oh, great lefty with a wide open stance.
But I'm there with my dad and my brother. I was there as a fan that day, and it was my brother's bachelor party, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
A good day to go. So it was my brother, my dad, and a couple of my brother's friends. We all go. We sit in the upper deck, about as high as you could possibly be on the first base side, surrounded by Cardinal fans.
Oh, great.
Now, we all know how good Sutter is as well at this time.
Yeah, all that. So, split-finger fastball was unhittable.
And, of course, he would come in for, like, 3-inning saves all the time, or 4-inning saves. It didn't matter. Like,
all right.
He'd be the starter, and then it would be Sutter. Like, they just threw him all the time.
The great thing about Bruce Sutter, too, if you remember, was I used to love watching him in All-Star games. Because the American League teams had, when he threw that split-finger fastball and that thing dove about 4 feet, those guys just looked at him like, what the hell was that? And he just kept throwing that same pitch, and they looked like triple-A players at best. It was unbelievable because they had no idea what that pitch could do.
Well, and, so in that day, I mean, the Cardinal fans, this is back when the Cardinal fans and the Cub fans got along great. We were friendly rivals with the Cardinals, by the way. People forget that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Forever.
Yeah.
I think it was Tony La Russa that ruined that forever. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
We were friendly rivals until that arrogant, cranky
former Cub.
There.
Former Cub.
Right. Former Cub player and former Sox manager.
Right.
But he ruined the whole vibe between the two cities, the two teams, I think, forever. But we were having a great time with the Cardinal fans that whole game. So Suter, it's 9-8, and we see Suter come on, and we're like, oh, man.
Yeah,
this is,
it's
know.
Over now.
So then, so Rhino hits the game-tying homer to make it 9-9. My dad jumps up when it happens. When he sat down, he sat on a mustard packet and splattered the people behind him with mustard. For the longest time, we actually called it the mustard game.
There you go.
But so then we're all excited. And then, well, then they score. They retake the lead. And then, again, so Sandberg comes up with a chance to tie it again in extras. And we're like, well, he did it once. But again, it's Suter. This is never going to happen again.
Right. Again, Suter again.
Well, then he does it again.
Oh.
And we're backstabbing and we're crazy. But again, but people forget that just tied it again.
Right. Yes. Even though Sandberg, as you said, hit these late inning heroics, they did not win. His home runs just kept the game going. They did not win the game.
So the trivia question is, the winner is that Davey Owen had the game-winning RBI single then after Sandberg's second game-tying home run.
Oh, is that a great trivia question? Who? Davey Owen.
Davey Owen.
Oh, my God. That's worse than Mendoza. Gee, that's worse than Dave Rosello.
Paul Popovich, my friend.
Paul Popovich. Gene Heiser.
We could go on all day.
I know. Wow.
Carmen Fanzo.
Oh, I used to love Carmen. Pete LeCocq.
There you go.
But, yeah, no, what a game that must have been. And the thing is, too, don't forget now, that's 1984. That really was a turning point for the Cubs season in terms of them winning the division that year, because they really, with those kind of heroics on national television, first of all, it established Ryan Sandberg, and don't forget he won the MVP that season.
Oh, yeah. No, that put him on the map.
Put him on the map and put the Cubs on the map in terms that,
yep.
They were serious, and then certainly after the All-Star break, they picked up Rich Sutcliffe, who went 16-1, which was off the charts, and and they wound up winning the division that year, and sadly should have went to the World Series, but thanks to Leon Durham.
Well, so I'm at that last home playoff game as a reporter. I'm a kid out of college. I've already been to a bunch of games that season. I could not have been more thrilled. We clobber the Padres. I think it was like 10-1 or whatever it was.
Oh, them going to after those two games at Wrigley, that was like, it's over. There's no question.
So I'm walking to my car, and again, I'm privileged enough to actually get paid as a Cub fan to watch that game in person. And I'm walking back to my car with my tape recorder and everything in my hand as a reporter. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, my team's going to go to the World Series.
Right.
I can't believe it, because there's no way we're going to go on the road and lose three in a row. So I will. And then, of course, then the roof fell in, but, in typical Cubs fashion back then.
Great. Before we go, I have about 5 minutes. I want to talk quickly about the Chicago Blackhawks. I did want to say, tomorrow, don't forget, on Saturday, Crosstown Classic can be heard right here at WGN as the Cubs take on the Chicago White Sox at a Guaranteed Rate Field. And what time, Curtis, is the game? 5:40?
Pre-game starts at 5:40. You can catch first pitch at 6, just after 6 o'clock.
Right here at WGN 720. But I wanted to talk quickly about another team that is heard here exclusively on WGN Radio. And that, of course, is the Chicago Blackhawks. This has been a team that has certainly been in transition for the last couple of years. They've missed the playoffs. They had a good little run, but not enough last year. And then even the 2 years before that, they were knocked out of the playoffs in the first and second rounds. Last year was certainly a year of shock when Joel Quenneville, who won 3 Stanley Cups here, was fired early into the season. And so while the Blackhawks were in a transition, getting used to a new coach, they put on a nice little winning streak toward the end of the season, but it wasn't enough. So you still had to have a question as to how good was this team, as you mentioned earlier, Mark. You've got your core guys of Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, still solid, excellent players, but getting a little older. In hockey today, 30 is old when you've got 18-year-olds skating out there now.
Yep, no doubt.
So you know, if, being a Hawks fan as I am for as since I was a little kid, I wondered, you know, geez, are hopefully the Blackhawks are not going to become the Detroit Red Wings of the next 10 years, who haven't really been in the playoffs. They haven't really been a threat since they were so dominant in the 90s. But my gosh, did the Blackhawks and Stan Bowman turn some heads this week?
Well, you could tell Stan was just as unhappy as the Hawks fans at what happened. And you could also tell he understood what happened when the team lost his goalie, because we didn't replace him, and that was it. Well, when he went out, did anybody see this signing coming out of nowhere, Robin Leonard?
I don't think anyone saw this. No, I don't think anyone saw that. And I don't think anybody saw Andrew Shaw coming back to the Hawks either.
I mean, this Ryan Carpenter, that's a big signing. They have gone out and done some amazing things in the course of just the last few days. I mean, Leonard could have won the Vezina.
I mean, the Blackhawks, and Stan Bowman has said it, and it's not an exaggeration, with a healthy Corey Crawford, and that may be a question mark. Because we don't know. He's had two concussions now. He's missed a lot of games. But if you have a healthy Corey Crawford with Leonard, the Hawks may have the best 1-2 goalie setup in the NHL right now.
Well, I guess for a total of $11 million, you're better. But, but we know how important goalies are. It's money well spent. And I think that's what's going to happen. They haven't really said, but I don't think Leonard signs unless he gets the, you know, assurance that he's the starter. Otherwise, why would he do it?
Or he gets the assurance that he is the starter next year. I don't think, once again, it's very difficult with a team, with a championship team of any kind in any sport, when it's time, sadly, to replace those players that got you those championships.
Right.
And it's
right.
never easy. And fans never want to see those people go. But I, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to have met Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough and Jay Blunk and spent some time with them. And I know the kind of professionals they are, and I know the high standard of excellence that they have. And I know that John McDonough cannot have been happy the last 4 years. And you've seen that when they fired Joel Quenneville. I have nothing to base this on except my own observation. And I have to think that after last season, I think that once Quenneville was gone, there were no untouchables, at least in the administration on that team. And I think that Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough must have sent a very strong and very positive, but very strong message to say, okay, we have to right this ship because we are not going to miss the playoffs again. And so certainly Stan Bowman, given some playoff or given some salary cap ability to move around, has certainly stepped up to the challenge. There's no question about that.
No doubt about it. And as a Corey Crawford fan, by the way, but he's had all those concussions, I feel really good for him in this because the pressure's off in a sense.
Right.
I'd rather have Leonard play 50, have Corey only play 30 or whatever it is.
Right.
So he's got time between his starts. He can stay healthy. And I think that makes a really good hockey team with those two guys. When your backup is fresh and really good anyway, and he can stay healthier, I think that's a heck of a combination.
Well, the fact, what you just said, not only is that that's a great setup, but, you know, in reality, there is no backup. You have two number one goalies here. I mean, like you said earlier, I mean, this guy is a Vezina trophy nominee. I mean, this is not just some guy like Cam Ward last year who had a few good seasons and was a dependable guy. This is a top-line goalie here.
Well, and Shaw, by the way, you're not just bringing him back for nostalgia. He was really good last year.
Oh, yeah.
7 points.
And as I said, you know, they have never had that. The one thing the Blackhawks have always missed, and they've, since Dustin Byfuglien left, and they've been trying to put people into that role, and it's never really worked until Shaw came. And it was a shock when they had to get rid of Shaw, and they were under so many, you know, salary cap restrictions. But he's a guy that will grind, who will add some physicality because the Hawks are more of a finesse team, and certainly be that guy who stands in front of the net. I I had the chance to meet Phil Esposito a couple of months ago. The Blackhawks did a thing, and I talked to him for a couple of minutes, and I said to him, I said, Phil Esposito used to just stand in front of the net. I said to Phil, I said, I don't even know if you knew how to shoot. I said, because all he did was just sit in front of the net like a big tree.
I know.
And then the rebounds, and he would just push the puck with his stick and score 700 goals.
Used to drive me nuts as a Hawks fan.
Yeah, but that was what he did, and that is important. And Shaw will certainly bring a physicality as well as that aspect of the team. And as I said, the goalie position is always important throughout the season as well as in the playoffs. And now the Blackhawks are certainly armed in that area too. So, I think things looking up for this season, and we look forward to the Crosstown Classic tomorrow and Sunday with the Cubs. We got a pretty good weekend of sports here, and I want to thank Mark for taking some time out and staying up late with us. Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Always fun.
Okay, Mark Vasco, talking sports here at WGN. I'm Jim Toronto, talking talk till another hour or so. Take a quick break. No switching. You got a friend in me. I love Randy Newman.
You got a friend in me.
Oh, you do, Roger. Just so you know that.
I appreciate it.
This is our song, Roger.
With friends like.
Oh, yeah, listen.
I love the song.
Yeah. Miles and miles from your nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Or you got a friend in me.
That's me and Roger right there. You got a friend in me. And you got a host in me until 1 o'clock. It's Jim Toronto with you here till 1 o'clock. It is about 12:13. And what I wanted to talk about now, that's the reason we're playing that song from Toy Story. About 2 years ago, I don't know where I was or what I was doing, but I must have gone to some fast food place or some food court or something. And you know how you get those plastic utensils, you know, in the little plastic bag when you go to some kind of food court? Or maybe I was even at a catered affair. I'm not really sure. But they had the plastic utensils there. And they had that one weird-looking utensil that was the rounded spoon with the edges of a fork. And so I grabbed it, or maybe I didn't have a choice. Once again, really not sure of how or why I had the spork, as I soon learned the name of it. I didn't even know it was called a spork. It was that spoony thing. Or was it that forky thing? I don't know. Because it is such a perfect utensil, a hybrid that takes the stabbing effect of the fork and the scooping effect of the spoon and combines it in, I think, just an elegant and perfect way. And so I was using this this plastic spork, and I was just like, this is a great utensil, and I've never really appreciated it. And it does the job of both the spoon and the fork. I became obsessed with it, as I often do with anything that catches my fancy. I'm always a half full guy. Anybody who knows me knows I'm such an optimist. No, but I am I'm all in. When I like something, I'm all in. I jump right in full with clothes on, deep end. And that's why I've been a fan of so many people or so many things for so many years. But so I went on a quest. I first found out that this utensil that looked like a spoon and looked like a fork was called a spork. So once I found out its name, thanks to the internet machine, I got on and I hit spork. And sure enough, you know, I'm like, wait a minute. I can actually get a metal spork that isn't just some cheap plastic utensil, because I want to use this as a daily eating utensil in my home. And sure enough, at Crate and Barrel, Chicago's very own, they had them there. So my wife and I, we went to the Oak Brook location of Crate and Barrel. And I walked into the utensils part. And I'm looking around, and I am not seeing any sporks. I'm seeing plenty of forks and plenty of spoons, but I'm not seeing any sporks. So I walk up to the
attendant. There you go.
And I say,
salesperson.
And I say, can you give me a spork? And first she was aghast, and she called security on me. And then when I explained to her what I was looking for, I was looking for a utensil and not...
And then she called again.
Not an act. she said, a spork? And I said, well, you have them. And she didn't believe me. And then she went on her own internet machine at the store.
Called a computer.
What's that?
You said an internet machine.
It's the internet machine.
What the?
That's what I call it.
Wow.
She went on her internet machine. And sure enough, she goes, wait a minute, aisle 7. And so she's like, I'm coming with you. I want to see where these things are.
Wow.
And sure enough, kind of hidden, you had to know where they were, weren't in the spot you'd expect them to be. I'm not even sure where they were. It was like in the Island of Misfit Toys. The poor spork was sitting there, not next to the Holy Trinity of utensils,
mm-hmm.
not by the knife, not by the fork, not by the spoon. It may have been by a ladle, you know, completely, you know, the second class, by a ladle, by a sifter, you know, just completely wrong spot. Certainly not a spot where all the young women who were registering to build their utensil drawer and say, oh, put down 10 sporks for our registry, which they should be doing. But sure enough, we found them, and I bought all, I think there was 5 or 7. I have to go back and count how many I have in my drawer. But we bought them all. And so the spork now has a place in our utensil drawer. And we use it on a regular basis and have been using the spork for 2 years. And every time we use it, my wife and I look at one another and say, this is the greatest thing. Why do we still have a fork and a spoon when this does the job of both? It is the perfect utensil. And I guess the only thing I would have to say, I mean, for instance, if you are eating a Chinese meal, and you don't do chopsticks. Do you do chopsticks?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
Yeah,
well, of course.
Love it.
Well, you're pretentious. But
excuse you.
Well, I mean, why? Okay,
I spent years learning how to use them because I thought it was cool.
Well, of course.
And there's some foods that you try to get the rest of that rice off the bottom of the.
This is my point here, right? Exactly. Yeah. How the heck do you eat rice with chopsticks?
And eating it with a spoon, you still can't get the corners.
But if you have a spork,
well. Yeah, but I'm used to the chopstick.
I'm just saying, if you talk about spork,
and you know what the food that comes to mind that is perfect for it?
What?
Corn.
Oh!
Not corn on the cob.
No, corn.
Just
no,
corn
like a cream corn or.
How do you poke it with the spoon?
Well, no,
fork?
You scoop it.
Do you scoop it with the spoon? What do you do with the corn?
Well, what's great about the spork is I said, if you say you had beef fry rye.
All right.
Okay?
Yeah.
If you got beef fry rye, you can have
people coming in after me.
You can get the rice and the beef in one scoop because you're stabbing the meat and it's not falling off the spoon like mm-hmm. it would with the spoon, and yet it's scooping. As I said, it's stabbing and scooping at the same time. It is the greatest. Every time we have something that it's so spork. It's made for the spork. I guess what's the spork worthy? I don't even know what the word would be. Spork appropriate?
Yeah.
We look at each other and we go, look at how perfect this thing is for this. Now, I have to say,
yeah,
it's not good for soup.
Well, so you know what you get?
What?
You get, like they have for lunch, half sandwich, half soup.
Right, no,
because only half of it is a spoon, so now you can eat half the
No, the problem
I'll
with
I'll be
this,
in here if you need me.
When you, when you like you know, I know Progresso is always, you know, bragging about how chunky their soups are.
Yeah, right.
But the problem is, I have tried to eat, because I was like, okay, I'm never using the spoon or the fork again. And so I have now found some foods that are not well suited to the spork, and soup is one of them, because when you scoop the soup, say that 10 times fast, when you scoop the soup, it runs off the jagged edge of the fork. So by the time you lift it up to your mouth,
yeah,
it's back in the bowl.
Well, wait till it spills out first, and then slurp the soup.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. So for if now, and but what, the weird sensation is to eat yogurt with the spork, because it works.
Yeah.
But you know how tactile your tongue is, and you
say that five times.
Yeah, and so you have a sense of the way, like, you know, when you scoop ice cream or you scoop some yogurt, you know, sometimes it's kind of a domed effect on your spoon. And then when you put it in your mouth, you feel the entire spoon, and it's soft. And there's that little lump of, say, yogurt, and you swallow. So that's the expected feeling that you get, and that's what you expect. Well, it's different with the spork, because, once again, it works fine. But you have to remember that there are those sharp edges there. And so if you are using something that is more scoopable than stabbable.
Right. You got to be careful. You got to eat it from the side.
You do have to be a little careful. But I'll tell you, in terms of the use of it, I mean, to your point, rice with any kind of protein, as they always say, would you like protein in your salad?
Sure.
Oh, but to eat a salad is fantastic with the spork.
Of course.
Because you can scoop up
the croutons.
Or the dressing.
Right.
In it.
Right.
Whereas.
And still have some
and still have
lettuce.
It. And as I said, when you're eating rice, you know, so often, you know, for those of us who don't use chopsticks.
Excuse you.
No, you know what? I do enjoy.
You use them.
No,
I bet you do.
I enjoy. No, I don't use them all the time, but I do enjoy using them. But I don't use them all the time. Whenever we order Chinese food, they do give them to you. I find that it's fun to eat an egg roll with that, but I do not. I mean, I don't know, how do you eat, seriously, how do you eat rice with chopsticks?
I was going to say scoop. You kind of you go in a pincer movement, and you kind of hold it.
A what?
A pincer movement.
Okay, let me go on my internet machine both and look that up. Pincer.
I'm glad you're in there.
Is that like a Doberman?
Say it, don't spray it.
Like a Doberman.
Like a
pincer?
Doberman. Yeah, you go in with a pincer movement with the two sticks, and you kind of hold it. You kind of scoop up, but kind of pincer.
But you have
in.
To balance it, right?
Right.
You have to
but
be like, well, I know, but I have to be Nick Wallenda here.
Have you ever seen, like, people eating, like, rice out of a bowl? They do it fast, and they're holding the bowl right
under their
mouth.
Yeah, they lift the bowl up, and then they kind of scoop it.
And right, so you use the two sticks.
Or you know what?
As a scoop.
Or you know what?
You could use a...
A spork!
Oh, my God.
And you don't have to hold the bowl up to your mouth and do this pincer thing that you're talking about. You can just sit down and talk to somebody, and we can use your spork.
Right.
I'm telling you, the spork...
Then you start looking like a Japanese cartoon.
Yeah.
Trying to eat rice as fast as you can.
Yeah, exactly.
You ever seen Elton eat?
Oh, man.
Exactly like a Japanese cartoon.
Oh, man, I'm like a hurdler. I mean, my wife, like, turns around and the plate is done. She's like, did you even taste any of that?
Everybody, waitress puts the food down on the table. Suddenly there's a huge slurp.
Oh, yeah,
and they
done.
Turn around and, you want dessert?
Done.
Done.
But no, that always drives me crazy with the chopsticks and the rice. I do like eating the other things, like a nice little dumpling.
Oh yeah,
with a chopstick is always fun. Or as I said, an egg roll or a nice shrimp toast.
Yeah, I like sweet and sour chicken or shrimp.
Right, when you dip it, I understand it. Very
delicious.
It's a good. It's so rudimentary and yet it works. But it is tough when the main staple of that type of food is rice, and the hardest thing to eat is the staple, is the foundation. You know what I mean?
No, I understand.
But so the Spork, anyway, I've been a fan of the Spork for a while, and then I was so excited when I literally took a step back. 2 or 3 weeks ago, whenever Toy Story came out, on the front page of the Tribune entertainment section with the review, the Michael Phillips review of the film, I had no idea that the Spork was even in the movie. There's this huge picture of a Spork. And it says Sporks to the rest. It's like the main star, the runaway hit is not Woody. It's not, Buzz Lightyear. It's not Mr. Potato Head. It's Forky the Spork. And I'm like, I've been Spork. I've been the Spork champion. For 2 years, I've been talking up the Spork and no one's listening to me. But apparently, I'm thinking that Disney did.
Somebody did. They stole your idea.
Episode 49 from 2 years ago, April 2017, on my podcast, I talked about the Spork.
No, I'm serious.
So go out.
I think
out,
you need a lawyer.
Go out.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Crate and Barrel. Go online. I want to, just as I have gotten a run on Cashmere Woods, my
still
favorite
for that
scent
deal.
From Glade. Cashmere Woods.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get the show throughout.
No, sorry, Curtis. You can't go through a whole show without at least one spritz of Cashmere Woods.
No cigar.
No, we got close. Almost a half hour. He was crossing his fingers, but that's not going to happen. I had to get it in there. But just as I was a champion for Cashmere Woods, as I said, I went the other day, bought 10 more cans. I had to go to the very back because of all the different flavors or scents.
Right.
This one was the most popular. So I'm taking credit for that. And now I want a run on Sporks. I want Crate and Barrel to go, whoa, what? Why is everybody asking for a Spork? And you could say, well, sure, it's the movie. But I would like to think it's me. And it's another reason why you should always be listening to Elton Jim Toronto. And with that, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Are you playing fireworks? What are these, from your yard?
Yeah. Got some M&A's in here.
There you go.
Got them at a discount store.
My gosh. I can make that sound with my arm and my
Let's
hand.
Let's not do that. Seriously.
My God. I said to Curtis before the show, hey, Curtis, can you find me some fireworks? You know, special effects, because I want to sweeten this segment. But those all sound like duds.
Well, what are you going to do? Stick a microphone? Have a guy flying up there with a microphone?
No, but I thought I would hear like, boom.
Oh,
push,
that.
Boom, push. These are like.
Do that last one again.
Push. Are you a big firecracker guy? Fireworks guy?
Me?
Yeah.
When I was younger and when we lived in Vegas, in fact.
Oh, you lived in Vegas?
Oh, well, yeah.
Wow.
Our daughter was born there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I won her at a crap table. we would...
Is that why you named her 21? It was a weird name. 21 Baddish. I never understood it, but now I get it.
No, it's a long name. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes.
It would have been perfect if it was a boy. Blackjack Baddish.
There you go. But, they would sell the packages of... You know, different kind of, smoke bombs, sparklers, and some stuff like that.
Punks.
And behind, well, the punks would come around and steal them.
Yeah.
But,
hi-oh.
But behind our apartment building was an open field, and we'd sit out there. I'd, light off the whole package. Our neighbors would come around and enjoy, and then we'd go swim in the swimming pool.
But, I mean, do you enjoy, like, a fireworks display, like they had at Navy Pier?
I do. I don't like the crowds.
Yeah, that's the thing that turns me off of it. I don't mind them, but... I wish I could have the barge in my yard.
Small barge?
Yeah, just a small barge in my yard.
Well, I'll tell you that.
They could shoot them off and I could watch them.
That's not
going to
work. We have a guy across the street.
You got a firecracker guy?
Oh, my gosh. This guy, I don't know what country he goes to get these.
Oh, really?
Yes. They are serious industrial grade.
So he's shaking the house.
It's not just shaking the house, but the things explode so high up, the embers go flying.
Wow.
All over.
That's not good. Actually.
And I know. And that's scary. I've called the police on them numerous times, and no one comes around because obviously people all over the city are doing this.
Right. Plus, the police are probably watching the fireworks.
Well, maybe. But so, I mean, I understand what you'd like to do, but in this type of population where people, you know, living right next to each other in apartment buildings and,
right,
and all that,
yeah,
you can't do that. That's why everything's done out over the lake or in big football fields or something like that.
I read something this week which was very interesting and I never thought of. Everybody, of course, in the last several years has been talking about, not only to your point about how, you know, these fireworks are so loud and potentially dangerous with the embers, because, you know, gravity does play a role here, folks, and those things do have to fall somewhere.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I think we've forgotten is it's not just, everybody talks about how their pets are affected by the fireworks,
Rufus,
especially
was,
dog. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But here's the thing that, that I read that really I turned my head and said, wow, is not just your pets.
Uh-huh.
What about all the animals walking around the forest preserves and in the streets?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Think about your stray cats or your deer or your raccoons or your possums.
Rabbits.
They are going out of their minds.
Yeah.
They don't know what the hell's going on. You know, they don't have someone in the house that's holding them and and kind of protecting them or preparing them for them or soothing them. They're just out in the open. And these things, could you imagine if you're just some, you know, feral cat or some, you know, raccoon just, you know, out for a nice night on the town, and all of a sudden you're hearing these explosions?
And there's no Yul Gibbons around
to
come and comfort you.
And I never thought about the stray animals or the wild animals that are out there and how the fireworks affect them. So that's also another little byproduct of that. But I have to say, and many times I will talk about Chicago. Let me please preface my comments here by saying I love Chicago. Mm-hmm. Born and raised here. Had several opportunities to leave Chicago on many occasions to live somewhere else, but always wanted to stay. When I criticize the city for something, it's not because I'm bad-mouthing it. My view is I'm trying to point out some things that we need to get better at. The only way you can solve a problem is by identifying a problem and then finding a solution. And sometimes, yes, sometimes it's not that nice or easy to point out a mistake or point out a deficiency. But if you really care about the person or the situation, you have to do that. Talk to any doctor who has to treat any kind of an illness or a disease. It's not easy to tell a patient that they have some kind of a serious disease, but you have to tell them so that they can face it and then understand what it will take to treat it. But you first have to identify it, recognize it, accept it, and then you can begin to treat it and hopefully eradicate it and make it better. And that's so when I talk about Chicago, I'm not putting it down. I'm trying to point out something that I see is a deficiency that we need to work on. And I got to say, I watched the Chicago fireworks display on TV, and I watched the New York fireworks display on TV. Oh my gosh. It was like Mayberry versus Rome. I mean, New York had four barges blasting these things off.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous. And they had other boats, and it was over the Brooklyn Bridge. And I know people in Chicago don't like New York. I'm not one of them. I think New York's a great city. I love going there. I don't think you don't have to hate New York to love Chicago. I think you can love both of them. They're both different cities. They both have their own different personalities, and you can celebrate both. But my gosh, it was so gorgeous. And what made me mad about it is that not only did Chicago's pale in comparison, and then I read about it. I went on my internet machine and saw that they had like 30,000 fireworks yesterday in New York. I don't know what Chicago had. And it was even, they had 10,000 more than they had the year before. Because I always watched the New York one. And it was, yesterday I was like, this is spectacular. And I don't even like fireworks displays. And I was like, this is spectacular. And sure enough, they said that this year's was grander than others. So what made me mad about the Chicago one is I thought it paled in comparison. And secondly, Macy's, if you watched it on Channel 5 yesterday, Macy's sponsored the 4th of July New York fireworks. Now, with all the PR problems that Macy's had in Chicago 10 years ago when they bought Marshall Fields, why the heck, as a civic citizen, as a way to generate some good feeling about your brand, to generate some good feeling about you as being now a new member of the Chicago fabric, and you're taking over Marshall Field, which is one of the founding department stores of this city, why can't Macy's sponsor the Chicago fireworks display and put on a display that could rival New York's? We've got the water just like New York does. So why can't we have four barges out there exploding these beautiful fireworks? They were gorgeous and they were in time to the music. And the other thing that bugged me about the Chicago one, they had all these, you know, these new songs, you know.
Oh, that you know, you didn't recognize.
Well, there was all these hip-hop, which is fine. Yeah. But when you see a 4th of July fireworks display, the whole idea is to celebrate the country's birthday. And it's to inspire a sense of patriotism. And you are celebrating the country. And you want to get that welled up feeling of country pride. And there's nothing better than that, than some of the great orchestral songs by Sousa and some of the other thing. In New York, they had some big orchestral things. They played, the theme from Superman, the theme
that's an old standby,
the theme from E.T., the theme from Star Wars. They had Stars and Stripes, America the Beautiful, all these big orchestral, uplifting, patriotic songs that were in perfect time to all these explosions over the Hudson over the Brooklyn Bridge. It was just gorgeous. It was, and I'm not even big on this, and I was sitting there going, now this, to the point where I said to my wife, I said, you know what, we're going to New York next year on 4th of July. I got to see that in person. I got it now for me to say that, because I won't even go to Berwyn to see a fireworks display. But I would want to, if they do like they did this year in New York, next year I'll go. And Chicago's was fine, but it had all these newer songs. It didn't really, it was just kind of very pedestrian. It, you know, puck, and it was over. And I just said, wow, you know, once again, Chicago, we always settle. And I don't know why we don't do big better. We don't do big better. We don't do good. We don't do big very well.
I don't think
here.
We have a sponsor for those.
Well, but why not? We're the third largest city. This is my point. Macy's or somebody needs to step up and give Chicago.
Well, Macy's probably spent all their promotional money on the one in New York.
Well,
they
then they need
to.
Well,
us.
You know what? They could find some more.
Okay.
Because they deserve, I think Chicago deserves a blowout that turns heads and makes eyes open. And as I said before, the music is a key to those fireworks displays. And, you know, I don't want to hear Cardi B and Beyonce and all these other people.
Beyonce.
What, isn't that her name?
Beyonce.
What is it?
Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Oh, I'll have to look that up on the internet machine. That's I don't think you're saying it right.
Look it on your internet machine.
I want to hear Sousa. I want to hear Copeland. I want to hear, you know, John Williams once again. Not the one from here.
Right.
I want to hear Star Wars, and they had the Rocky theme, and it was just inspiring. And I looked at Chicago's, and I was just like, you know, I could be in Hillside right now. And no knock against Hillside. But my point is, I mean, this is the third largest city in the country.
But, you know, the young kids nowadays Jim. You know, they like different types of music. And for them to come out, since they are the majority of the people going to the theater.
But here's my point,
yeah,
Roger. Instead of catering,
well, why not
to
that's
them?
Your
no,
audience.
You're no, because the point of this is to inspire,
right?
Patriotism. If you want to hear Beyonce and Cardi B, then go to a club. But if you're going to go to a fireworks display on July 4th, that's about America's birthday, and that's about patriotism. And so that's about big brass bands.
Yeah.
So for 10 minutes, you don't have to hear Cardi B or Chief Cleef and all these other guys. You can get into the spirit of what the holiday is. We don't have to cater to you. Because you just like that music. Maybe you'd find out, God forbid, that you actually like the song America the Beautiful because you never heard it before. God forbid somebody would play something that you haven't heard.
I think towards the end there were more patriotic songs played. Towards the
in
end
New York
the,
for a half hour, there wasn't. I didn't hear Cardi B one time.
I understand that.
And I'm telling you why New York's was better.
All right.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
This is a 4th of July American tradition.
Now, you want to go back? So you've been in Chicago all your life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you remember when the Grant Park Symphony played the 1812 overture to the fireworks, or the fireworks went off to that?
Well, yeah. Then let's do that. Let's get this. I mean, Chicago Symphony Orchestra is world renowned.
Yeah.
Why aren't they out there at Navy Pier? This is my point. In Chicago, we just settle. We look around this city and we settle. Soldier Field is an embarrassment.
What do you mean?
They should have knocked it down and built an 80 or what?
You couldn't.
Then build it somewhere else. Chicago is the third largest white elephant that will never host the Super Bowl, that will never host a Final Four, that is not a dome in a city where it gets to be 10 degrees in December. We should have a dome. Lesser cities have better stadiums than we do, but we had to worry about 7 colonnades. Put the colonnades over in the Field Museum and build a real stadium. And that's my point. We settled. That's my point. And we just go, well, it's nice. It's not nice. We should have a world-class indoor dome stadium. Not Indiana.
Hey, Jim. Tell me how you really feel.
Well, I'm telling you. I'm telling you,
I hear what you're saying.
And sadly, this city is, and that's why I hope Mayor Lightfoot, you know, she seems like she has some ideas. I hope to God that she is serious because there are a lot of problems here because for the last 30 years, we've had horrible mayors. Mayor Daley, you know, putting some flowers in a median doesn't cut it. Rahm Emanuel, he's already, people don't even remember he was mayor. That was a wasted 8 years. For 30 years, Daley, as I said, he cheaped out on Soldier Field. Millennium Park, people say, well, he built Millennium Park. Well, he didn't build it. It was built by private money. And if you remember, it was also about 2 or 3 years late. It's called Millennial Park, and I think it opened in 2002 or 2003. So it missed the millennium, per usual in Chicago. Why do we put up with this? Why do we put up with this? I hope to God we have washed out this stuff that has permeated us, and this is a great city, but we've got some problems. And Roger, we were talking about this before.
Yeah.
Here's this fireworks display, 70-some thousand people, and then after everybody gathers at Naver Pier and has a good time, then we're stuck with 3 people being stabbed.
Yeah.
And right away, whatever fun or excitement or communal experience that we had to celebrate the city, we're reminded about some of the realities of this city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very sad. And you know what? We can't keep saying, oh, well, that crime is only in certain areas. Well, clearly, it proved yesterday that it is not in certain areas. And sadly, it's in areas where we should be, you would think, would be free of crime, where people are there to have a good time. And clearly, we've got some major problems here, but
okay. Well, and let me throw this out. So you have two sides of a city.
Mm-hmm.
You have the financial side where you have your commitments to the safety and cleanliness of your city. I'm going to just throw everything into those two categories.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your bread and circuses, which, if you remember back to when Jane Byrne was mayor, she was accused of focusing only on the bread and circuses, which she didn't, but that's another story. So the money to keep the city running, the safety and cleanliness of the city, right now, Mayor Lightfoot is focusing on that because the city of Chicago, it could be in debt. The recent analysis of the budget came out, and it shows that the city could be in debt anywhere from $500 million to $700 million. That is going to have to be made up.
I understand
higher
that.
Fees and
yes.
taxes.
No, I understand.
You have
that.
To take care of that before you start spending money on fireworks.
I'm not saying that you spend money on fireworks. That should be done by some sponsor. What I'm just saying is we have accepted poorly run government, and we have accepted less than the best in what we do. And if you want to talk about these $500 or $700 million in debt, well, that goes back to prove my point.
Mm-hmm.
Who was mayor for 20 years? Where did that debt come from? That was Mayor Daley. That was Mayor Daley, who bragged how his budgets were always balanced. And the only reason they were balanced because he was borrowing money at crazy amounts to have a balanced budget. And meanwhile, he kicked the can and then he left. And he left us with the can. So much so that Rahm Emanuel couldn't even say Mayor Daley's name for 8 years because he couldn't see the previous administration. Well, who was that for 20 years? So give me a break. My point is, I hope that Chicago is finally getting fed up with the kind of government and the kind of governing that we've had. And I know we've got a deep hole to dig ourselves out of. But I love this city, and I just want it to be the best that it could be. And right now, it is not. And I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. I'm trying to be a realist to say, let's look at what we have and what we are, and how do we do better? That's all I'm saying. And the fireworks was just yesterday to say, boy, here's New York and here's Chicago. New York has 8 million people. How come their crime isn't as bad as ours? How come their budgets aren't $700 million in debt? How come their pension funds aren't so crazy? You tell me why. We'll be back after this.